We're down the home stretch here at Money Life at Morningstar, and I told you that you might get some surprises as we got to the finish line. Well, this is a surprise and a treat because I'm joined right now by Andrew Foster. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Seafarer Capital Partners. It is seafarerfunds.com. If you're not familiar with what he does, I'm not going to spend the time listing the funds. If you're not familiar with what he does, go check out the website again. It's seafarerfunds.com. But like I said, Andrew is one of your favorites. I know because every time he's on the show, I wind up hearing from pretty much all of our regulars going, I love it when he's here. So the fact that we get to connect in person is great. Andrew, thanks so much for stopping by.
Chuck, it's my pleasure, and it's been too long since we've seen each other in person. We get to catch up from time to time, but it's wonderful to be back to normal.
Well, yeah. I'm not 100% sure this conference has been normal. No, it's been a little less than that, but it's starting to feel like normal.
That's right.
But the conference is starting to feel like normal. That is not the market. That is distinctly not the market we are in. And of course, you specialize in emerging markets. Right. And, you know, there's a basic question, because I know that although you specialize in emerging markets, you truly look around the globe. So where in the world do I want to invest for these market conditions? Not where do I have to invest? Where should I be? But where would you want to invest if you didn't have the emerging market side? Tell me which markets in the world are the best ones right now from an investable standpoint.
Well, I think my main pole star is always driven by valuation. And then there are other factors to consider. And right now, I am speaking to what I know best, but I do think the emerging markets are at a very low point in their valuation in the last decade. I started the firm that you mentioned, Seafarer Funds, about a decade ago. And we were at the opposite end of what might appear to be a giant cycle. Valuations were at 30 times price-to-earnings ratios and with fantastic forecasts for growth. We're now at a point where no one wants to touch the emerging markets, and for good reason, given what's happened with Russia and China in the last year. And I understand those concerns, but I would say we're at an awfully good starting point. And that's sort of the whole cloth of having a good investment journey, provided that you're patient and can hold for a longer period of time. I do think that the corrections that have happened in the U.S. and in Europe, I have a decent portion of my own personal portfolio in the United States, and I think these corrections may provide some opportunities to invest, but I would encourage people not to try and rush in and try and time some sort of bottom. Take it at a steady pace. Invest in either stocks or funds that you really believe you can hold for long periods of time, and I think these pullbacks in the market, which may become more than pullbacks. There's some people speculating we're heading to recession. I don't have a clear view on that myself, but I do think stock prices here are very high, the opposite of when I started Seafarer. When I started Seafarer a decade ago, stocks in the U.S. were very cheaply priced. People had a dismal view of the U.S. economy. It's kind of the opposite now. I'm not saying there's a grand cycle at work, but we are at a different perspective where people love U.S. stocks. They've enjoyed extremely high valuations. It may take some time for, I don't want to call it a bubble, but there's a lot of hot air in the market, and it may take some time for it to come to a new equilibrium and kind of get to a more stable place.
You mentioned that you have a diversified portfolio. Yeah. You're invested in America, even if your funds are focused on emerging markets.
Yeah.
We talked about valuations and how emerging market valuations have come down, while the market troubles here have, of course, made U.S. valuations better.
Yeah.
And as I know you are aware, because I played it for you, we had David Giroux, who was one of the big speakers here at the Morningstar Conference, on the show from T. Rowe Price Capital Appreciation, talking about, hey, you don't need to go international. So, yeah, you don't need to go international. You don't need to have more than one mutual fund if you want to do it right. But what's the case? What's that for the people who are nervous about putting their money into emerging markets at a time when there's a war, when China's got trade troubles, when we still have COVID problems? What's your answer to say, okay, you don't need to, because I won't say he's wrong, and I'm not going to get into that argument. I'm just going to say, what's going to make you say, okay, but this is why you want to?
Right. So I think two quick caveats, and then I'll explain why. I think you got to always invest for a longer. Every time you take your money out of the United States, you're taking on more currency risk. You're also dealing with potentially more volatile markets that you may not know as well, because the countries and the companies are foreign, and you don't get as much news about them. You may not follow them as closely. So you really have to have a more extended horizon. But I strongly believe it can be additive to your portfolio because the companies are worth it. That's the bottom line. The U.S. has had a very dominant economic cycle with a lot of great tech, leading-edge firms in the health sciences industry. But, the U.S. doesn't have a monopoly on this. And some of the best companies in the world are starting to actually emerge from the emerging markets. When I started my career in the emerging markets two decades ago, the countries were growing quickly, but the companies were often mediocre. They were okay, passable, but they grew fast because they were in a fast-growing country. The countries are slowing down. Russia's been kicked out of everyone's portfolio. China's not growing the way it once did, and also it's a political challenge. But there are great companies beginning to emerge that are dominating some of their industries. There are semiconductor firms, health firms. There are, I think, future consumer product firms that are going to be, in some cases, global leaders or at least regional leaders in their categories. And they're, I think, worth owning. And they give you some diversification against having an entirely U.S.-based portfolio.
And what's an appropriate return expectation? I'm not speaking specifically to your funds. I'll get you off the hook with your compliance, guys.
Right.
But if I look at an Ibbotson chart that tells me that, you know, large cap stocks do 10%, small cap stocks do 12%. If I hold them long term, you're encouraging long term investment.
Yeah.
What's the return I expect for taking the extra risk of going to emerging markets?
With emerging markets right now, I normally do not shun passive investment index funds. I think it can have a place in people's portfolios. But at this moment in 2022, I have to find myself saying that I don't think passive investment, or at least classic passive investment, is the way to go. You're going to get too much of the junk that's in the index in China. You no longer get Russia, but got a lot of Russian junk that's just been kicked out with losses. I think you have to be selective when you invest in emerging markets. So if you invest in an index, I think your return expectation might be even only 4, 5, 6% over long horizons. I think if you choose a more selective portfolio, I'm not necessarily advocating ours. Ours is one approach, but there are other good selective approaches out there, a selective approach that resonates with you. You might get a higher rate of return, maybe in the low the high single digits over. But the caveat is always don't invest in the emerging markets unless you can hold for 5 years, set it and forget it. If you can't, then you really shouldn't go in that direction.
Well, let's talk about a five-year outlook on a different level that clearly is going to affect investors, which is we have war. Obviously, Russia is considered an emerging markets country. Right now, it's not even a markets country because nobody's doing anything with him. Ukraine, a frontier market that is now not that anymore either. But there is a lot of talk about how this could spread. Look, if we go to World War, all bets are off, everything else. I don't need to have you talk about the extremes. Yeah. But as somebody who is investing in some of these places that could be more affected, where we're talking about, you know, what happens if Korea's get involved, or what happens if China, where's China going to side, or all those other sorts of things. How does that cloud the picture? How much extra risk do we actually have? And obviously, it's not the same as market risk.
Right.
You know, straight off, you could lose your money, you could have principal risk, but how much extra risk is in this market because of geopolitical risk?
It's definitely more serious than it's been at any time in my recent, in my last two decades. I think people have been concerned about some of these risks for you know, whether or not there would be confrontation between China and Taiwan, North Korea and South Korea, going back for 30, 40 years. That said, I think I am not as pessimistic as some about how the current conflagration and war between Russia and Ukraine might escalate to a global level. I think, and I do think valuations, as I said at the outset, valuations are very low in the emerging markets in my estimation, and that gives a lot of cushion for the kinds of risks you're talking about. It doesn't give you protection. You're still bearing those risks, but you at least have a better starting point where you might, where markets might be more adaptive to the kind of challenges that you face. It is a serious concern for us when we evaluate companies in China. We've never invested in Russia in our growth and income fund. And in our China, we have to be very selective about the kinds of investments we take up because of the kinds of political risk that exists between the U.S. and China today.
So yesterday, as we were doing Money Life at Morningstar, we had one of your former colleagues. Actually, I believe he succeeded you. We had Sid Bhargava from Matthews Asia. And we were talking about dividend investing because that's the strategy that goes there. So let's either reinforce the message or clarify the message or what have you. You're not a Matthews anymore, but still cut from that cloth. Right now, given the times that we have, should investors who are maybe a little bit nervous about emerging markets and their potential be trying to focus more on the dividend payers rather than the undervalued hot growers? Because at least you're getting paid to wait while whatever happens, happens there.
I think that's the being paid to wait is definitely an attractive feature of having an income orientation from your equities or whatever securities if you're investing in fixed income. But I think it goes even deeper for me. The search for income In other words, a company that can pay a relatively attractive and consistent dividend over time. To me, it's a real kick the tires kind of thing. It really helps you understand that the company's profits are what they say they are. If you have two companies, one generates a dollar of profits and one another one does as well, but one of them can pay you 30 cents of those profits as a dividend and the other one can't or won't, you have more, technically, financial theory says those two companies would be valued similarly, but there's some conditions where that theory doesn't really hold in practice. And in my view, in the emerging markets, that 30 cents of dividend really helps you know that that $1 of earnings is real and liquid enough to be shared with shareholders. And that bespeaks a higher degree of quality overall. So I think it really, I'm not saying that the high-flying growers that don't pay the dividends aren't worth it. What I am saying is the ones that do pay the dividends, you have more certainty in your investment, and it's a way of managing risk. The very sorts of risks that you were talking about earlier.
Andrew, great stuff. I have more questions. We'll just have to make time for those down the line when we're doing it back at our respective offices.
Chuck, it's always my pleasure, and I'd be happy to catch up with you and your audience.
That is Andrew Foster. He is the Chief Investment Officer at the Seafarer Funds. Seafarer Capital, online at seafarerfunds.com, on Twitter at Seafarer Capital. We're almost done with Money Life at Morningstar, but you want to stick around for that. We'll be right back.